Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Moving Spotlight Podcast. I'm your host, John Ruby. I'm here with my main man,
Corbin Coyle. Hey, everybody.
Everybody all around the
all
world.
All around the world.
We've got a couple of listeners like in Senegal and a couple of interesting places. That's interesting. You know? Yeah, they let us know. We have all the numbers and data. We know when you click this off. We know when you turn it
we
off.
We know.
Yeah, and we know who does it, right?
We're looking at you, John.
Yeah. I don't listen. No, I do. I do give myself critical feedback. I'm really hard on myself. Corbin, my question to you to start off the show on something fun and interesting. What's the best relationship advice you've ever been given, or let's say given to someone else?
That's an interesting one. It's also interesting.
Yeah, if this goes well, this might be our new theme of our show. Yeah. We might just drop all the acting
just
stuff.
Just go only. I'm not going to do well because I'm very single. I think just the generic good ones, you know, like you just want to make sure that you're, you know, listening, but also like attentive and not saying you statements. You know what I mean? Like it's like kind of about understanding the other side's perspective. Of course, it's a little bit hard to fall in, or it's easy to fall into that category. Disagreements do come up. Some of the best advice I've gotten is for something that like I need sometimes in a relationship is to know that you're not like, I guess, abandoning, for lack of a better term. So it's more just like, can we just hold hands for 30 seconds? You know, it's like just like literally just like a, let's just stop and be connected for like, I need to know that we're okay at the end of this. I need space. I need to go away. And actually, one advice that, not advice, I guess, but something that you said you used to do, or I'm not sure if you still do, is you do a weekly date night with your wife. And I really like that. I think that's really sweet it's hard to do. And I think that doesn't happen probably every week, but like finding a way to be like to date your wife, I think is very important.
Yeah. So you're talking about you statements. So like, can you say like, I don't want you to be crazy anymore? That's a nice thing. Does that
yeah,
work?
Yeah, I think I don't want you to be crazy anymore.
Oh yeah, the you's in there. Yeah. You's in there.
But you also say that to me every day. So like, I don't know.
It's true. We should have to do that test. Statements I say to my wife versus statements I say to Corbin. They're very similar. I think that's good. And yeah, the date night has not been as consistent, but for a long time, for I think the first 6 years of like when my son was born, yeah, we did that like every week, which was awesome. Cool. And then our babysitter had a baby, so you know, we're searching for a new babysitter. Yeah, I think for me, the best relationship advice, and I think it came from my mom, who is still our number one rated podcast, which is crazy. She's got such an audience
in
Wisconsin.
Such a good group.
What a listening group. Yeah, I feel like it came from her is. One, communication, and then two is compromise. And I think both those things, you know, being able to communicate with your partner, your spouse, and really kind of listening, you know what I mean? Not just telling them you should do that, you know, giving them advice or whatever, kind of listening. So communicating, really hearing them. And then compromising, which is like, you know, you're not going to get your way all the time, and they shouldn't really get their way all the time. Yeah. Kind of trying to figure out where, you know, if you're doing too much stuff and you need to slow down, or if you're not doing enough and you need to be a little more social, you know, how do you kind of balance all those things, you know?
Yeah. I think you should be less crazy, all that kind of stuff.
that's a compromise. But yeah, no, I like it. It's a good topic. And I think, you know, every relationship is different. That's why it's so hard, I think, also to like, you know, really dig into it, because everyone, you know, each person has different needs, trying to figure that out. But, that's just kind of it's a fun topic. I want to get to our guest today. I'm excited that he's here. He's someone I've known for a long time, even though we haven't talked a ton. He's been working in the business for a long time. So I'm excited to hear kind of his advice, his thoughts. He's been doing a bunch of stuff. I want to welcome actor, writer, and content creator Clayton Ferris to the show. Hey, Clayton.
Hi, what's up? How's it going? Thanks for having me.
Yeah,
good. Glad you are here. Any good relationship advice you've heard or no?
I mean, yeah, I think, you know, like you said, it's all relationships are different, but I've been in couples therapy before. And I think one good one that stood out was kind of like, whenever you spend time apart, like if one of you goes out of town for an extended amount of time, whenever you come back in town, you have to kind of acknowledge that there's like this coming back together that's not always super clean and smooth. So you just have to kind of acknowledge that that might happen, and you can like kind of find your rhythm after that, if that makes sense. Because for me, I would always, it was, I don't know. Yeah. I'm the crazy one in a relationship. So
So you were offended by my earlier statement.
Yeah.
Oh,
you took that personal.
No, that's so funny. It's really funny you say that, Clayton, because I feel like in certain ways, it's a funny thing where I feel like there's certain elements where my wife is very much like my dad. And I feel like my wife and my dad are both like, if I go on a trip and I come back, it takes a while to like ease back in. Mm-hmm. Like they have to like warm up again, where I'm just like, I'm back. Hey, we're warm. And they're like, no, I need some time. You've been gone. So I know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah. So I'm kind of like that. And it just takes time to get back into the rhythm because I can, if whenever my partner goes away, it's like, I'm like, I immediately go into this place of like, oh my God, I'm left alone. I'm alone. Mm-hmm. I have to rebuild my life by myself, mm-hmm. which is very dramatic as well.
Yeah.
So you probably should not take relationship advice from me.
Yeah, but I hear something, I'm going to kind of butcher it, but there is something about like when you like share a problem or a concern, it kind of like cuts it in half or something like that. And I think there's some truth to that. Mm. You know what I mean? So when you don't have that person to kind of that you can share it with, you carry that whole burden. And sometimes like you can be like reflecting on your life or what am I doing or this, you know, when they're gone. And then, yeah, exactly. You're in that canoe all by yourself.
Yeah. But so when you see that person again, you just go, hey, it's going to be weird for a little bit.
Yeah.
And let's just acknowledge that. And usually acknowledging it just makes it not weird anymore. Mm.
Yes. That's a great point. Yeah. I think that's, I love when people have that kind of honesty and are able to exactly say that. And then great. We're on the same page. We know what's happening.
I think that's true with like a lot of things, or not even necessarily romantic relationships. As soon as you acknowledge the weird thing, it makes it less weird suddenly. Just like right away solves it.
Totally. Yeah. That's the honesty that goes along with like, I'm a hardcore honest person. Mm. And I think I am in my work and just life. I can't do it any other way.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting too, because you also, I'm just thinking of getting to know someone. Like when my wife is really upset and I'm like, are you okay? She'll be like, I'm fine. And I'm like, you're obviously not fine. But she literally, and I'm like, just don't say you're fine. Say I'm not. She's like, I have to say that. Like, that's like how she like gets through it. You know what I mean? But I'm like, you're not fine. But like with what you're saying is, but I know her now. And I'm like, okay, when she says the tight, I'm fine.
You know what
she needs time. She needs time. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? To kind of come back down and settle in. And so I think that's also, you know, with what you're talking about, there can be honesty. And then there can also be the time and the place for the discussion or the honesty, you know? Right. So, well, that's really interesting. I love hearing that. I'm curious, Clayton, kind of speaking of like relationships and honesty and kind of following your passions and being true to yourself. How did you kind of get into performing and acting and things like that?
For me, it's kind of like a classic story of just being like, ever since I was a little kid, just kind of loving to make people laugh, doing like the church plays and all that stuff. And it just kind of loving it and getting into it. And originally just really loving that like connection with an audience and making people laugh. It's always been about that for me. Mm-hmm. And then just the variations of doing it when I was a kid, then doing it in middle school, then high school. And then during high school, kind of finding like the community theater where I went and worked and felt like it was, you know, way more professional, and where I learned, I felt like I was like, oh, I'm kind of good at this. Like I want to keep doing it, and then going to school for it, and then graduating and getting a job working in like the hotel business and kind of completely not doing like theater or anything anymore in my early 20s, and kind of parading as like a normal person with like a normal job. Mm-hmm. And kind of just being unhappy with that. And then whenever, not really, really not doing anything professional besides a little bit of regional theater before that, but 2008-ish, like I got laid off from my job as like a normal person. Mm-hmm. And that was like the recession. And I was like, I'm just going to move out to LA for like this job at a film festival, like a summer job, literally. Mm-hmm. And I moved out here and kind of stayed. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad I did. But I learned, so it was when I got here that I kind of like got my crash course in like what this business is. Mm-hmm. In terms of TV and film. Like I've loved kind of learning about that, because I came here not knowing anything. And I moved here when I was 28. So I was already like, mm-hmm. you know, an adult. And I loved the fact that I got to know the business. I fell in love with the business itself. And I wouldn't even say that I really knew what acting was until I like started taking acting classes like maybe 7 years ago. Mm. And that's when I was like, oh, this is what acting is. Mm-hmm. And I actually really like that. So even though like I'm a man of a certain age, mm-hmm. I feel like I'm still new and fresh to it. And I love the process of it. Mm-hmm. Truly. Yeah. As cliche as that can sound.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know,
you're kind of always adding to that process too. Like you're never going to end that journey. You have to love it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I didn't have the experience that a lot of people have in like going to college for theater and like doing Meisner and like rolling around on the ground and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. My college experience was a little more just like the, like, you know, the study of art and like that sort of thing. So I started doing Meisner like not that long ago. And I was like, this is amazing. Mm-hmm. And everyone else's experience was like, I did this in college and I hated it. It's like, I still feel like I'm glad that my experience with acting has gone the way it has, because I still love it and I'm still finding fresh ways to like approach it. And I still feel like I'm trying to get better at it.
Yeah.
You know,
when I first moved out to LA, I moved out a little bit before you, Clayton, a couple of years. And it was funny because my first acting class, you just mentioned Meisner, was actually with Anthony Mindell when he had like 5 students. It was like my roommate at the time was going to him. Yeah, it was like so funny. We were like in like a dance studio on 3rd Street. This was so random. I'm just flashing back. But right after Anthony, then I took classes at Playhouse West, which was Meisner. And I just fell in love with Meisner too. I just thought it was so lovely. And I'd never done it. I was kind of like you. I went to school for like other things. And I just, and Playhouse West was great because it was the one acting class you got twice a week. So I'd go on Tuesday and Friday. It was like, you're getting 2 classes, you know, and it was not that expensive at the time. And just kind of being introduced to Meisner and just like kind of falling into that world with a bunch of other people that were falling into it too. And it was really
yeah,
a great introduction.
That first,
right?
That was whenever I did that the first time, and this was at BGB Studios, which is still where I take class today.
Yeah.
And they do it a little bit different. They just kind of use the repetition technique, mm-hmm. but they don't even really call it Meisner. It's just like mm-hmm. they use that idea and like do their own little thing with it, but mm-hmm. essentially it's repetition and being in a room with people learning that for the first time of all different levels in terms of like their acting experience.
Yeah,
was such a cool thing that reminded me of like the early days of doing theater, when like what I really fell in love with first about theater was like the group, mm-hmm. the group thing, being
yes.
in a group, putting something together. And yeah. you know, like I'm still chasing the experience I had when I did Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat when I was 16 with my strangers.
No, but you're right, that kind of that camaraderie, I think about that a lot, because some people that like comedy go into stand-up, which is fine, but it's kind of a solo thing, even though I know there's like a group feel. But then if you do improv, you're on like a team of 6 or 8, you know what I mean, a lot of times. And so there's kind of that camaraderie, you know, because when you mentioned Meisner and mentioned comedy, Clayton, it reminded me the other place I kind of fell in love with when I first got out here was Iowa West, mm-hmm. and fought, like, you know, kind of in, being introduced to improv and yes anding and all that stuff with another group.
Yeah.
You know, you're kind of like, oh my God, like we're all struggling together, but we're learning it together, you know?
Yeah,
so it's
for
a lovely
sure.
thing.
And like the cool thing about Meisner, which is funny, and I feel like I could be wrong, but a lot of people, I think a lot of men like Meisner, because it's like you finally get this like opportunity to like explore your emotions, you know, and mm. you're like, you get to put word to it and you get to like cry in front of a room and feel like mm-hmm. weird and empowered by that. And I think it's, there's that element of it that's just kind of like therapeutic in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
It affects your acting kind of like subconsciously. I don't know.
No, I think, I'm Corbin, I'm curious your opinion, but like Clayton, I mean, I think you're from Texas, right? From Texas?
Yeah.
Yeah. So like I'm from Wisconsin and there's a lot of like Germans up there. They don't show like any emotion, and then just very like sports, like, so emotion was very like tapping into that, like you're talking about, like, you know, that can be challenging. So I know what you're saying. There is kind of opens things up, which is cool to kind of be okay with that and explore that, you know, mm-hmm. for men or for women. Yeah.
Yeah. I think a lot of people love Meisner in particular, just or any sort of those activity based acting, because it forces you to be present for the first time in like a long time. Mm. Like we're always thinking ahead when we're like, oh, I got to get groceries, I got to do this, I got to do that. And then when you're just staring at another individual's eyes and then you're just mirroring it and going back and forth, it is like it is strange for sure. Especially like you were saying, Clayton, like when you're seeing somebody do it for the first time, it's kind of this like, oh, look, baby's walking, you know, like, and that's kind of cute and nice. And then it's also can be as deep as you need to go. You can do that for years if you want.
Yeah.
I was just listening to a podcast, and this one, it was about a woman who got like conned by this guy to open a restaurant, and he took some of her money, and she's explaining it to the host, and she's like, yeah, you know, I've been trying so hard for so long to open a bakery, and then he did this, and she kind of went like, oh, she almost went like yada yada yada, and then blah, and he's like, well, no, don't skip over that, like that was your dream, you know, because she's like, that was my dream, and then she goes back to like, yeah, that she's like, that was my dream. And then she starts bawling, right? Mm-hmm. So she skipped over that part because it's too painful, right? Which is what we do. You know what I'm saying? And so I think, Clayton, with what you're saying, that being present in that moment, and Corbin too, that's one of the things that as actors, we're always striving to do. And I think a Meisner in improv, it kind of lets us slow down and like, you know, be where your feet are, right? Mm-hmm. So Clayton, when you got out here and then started, you know, taking classes and things like that, were you auditioning for stuff right away, or how'd that journey come about?
So, not really. I got here and I was, like I said, I was working at this film festival, and I felt like I was kind of like learning a lot about like indie film and like mm-hmm. that whole side of things. And I found that really fascinating. And I lived with a friend who I knew out here who had just graduated from CalArts. We shared a studio apartment in Echo Park, and I was just like, I'm here, I'm in LA. And even though Dallas is a big city, it's like it was this, LA is a completely different place than Dallas, you know, it just is. And so I wasn't in culture shock, but I was just in like excitement, possibility shock. Mm-hmm. Like I was just like, oh, there's so many options out here. And although deep down I had always wanted to act, I never had really thought about the way to go about it. Mm-hmm. And someone had me audition for, like, the gal that I lived with, her friend was a casting assistant at I think it was Skirts Casting.
Skirts Casting, sure. Yes. Yeah, Jody. Yeah, I worked with Jody a lot. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she just kind of like called me in for a Jack in the Box spot.
What was her name? Do you remember, Clayton? I wonder if I know her.
Her name was Madeline.
Madeline. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And she called me in, and I went in and I auditioned. And I mean, I had done like, it wasn't my first time auditioning ever in my life, but
yeah,
this world of like a professional SAG after job where I could make a lot of money. And this was, you know, this was like years ago. So it was when there was more money at stake. But yeah. I have to just go on I have to just say that ever since I've been here, and I've been here almost 15 years, everyone's always been like the good old days. So it's like, no matter where you are, when it comes to like commercial residuals, there's always good old days. But I got a call back for this thing, and I was like, that's really cool. It was my first audition. I got a call back. Part of me was like, oh, maybe I could pursue commercial acting, and part of me was like, oh, I'm hooked, because that feeling of like getting a callback is like pretty intoxicating. And so then I just decided, I'm like, I'm gonna focus on commercials for a bit while I figure out the rest of this. And that's kind of what I did.
I think commercials are a great gateway drug to TV and film. No, it's a great way to sustain in a good way, you know, like, and commercials are wonderful, but I always feel like, yeah, that's part of the process, you know.
Yeah.
You're doing a mini movie. Yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah. And I mean, it's just a lesson in like, I don't know what it's later on. You kind of find out like, oh, this is actually advertising that I'm doing. It's not really film and TV, but it is like a gateway, like putting your foot in sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And I auditioned for like a year before I booked anything. Mm-hmm. I booked it was for Beatles Rock Band. And I did 3 non-union commercials before I was part of the union. Mm-hmm. And then I booked a McDonald's like union spot, and that got me into the union. Mm-hmm. Taft Hartlead, I think they call it.
Yep.
And yeah, that was probably 2.5 years in.
Yeah. Love and, that. Yeah. Taft-Hartley, for people that don't know, it's, we can't find someone in the union that can do this job, so we're going to take someone who's non-union and bring them in. So yeah, Taft-Hartley's, that's wonderful. You know, it's great.
Well, and I think that if this podcast is kind of about like people maybe learning about the biz a bit, it's like the way I got my first agent is kind of interesting to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was literally like when I got here, you know, I didn't, after my job working at this festival was over, I was like, okay. And that was only like 2 months, month and a half. So I was like, if I'm going to stay, I got to figure something out. And I was like, what do I know how to do? And I was like, not what do I know how to do, but I was like, I'm just going to go. I had a friend that was in a play at this company called Musical Theater Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And I thought Musical Theater Los Angeles was like the pinnacle of like Los Angeles theater. Like I thought it was like, you know, like sponsored by the city of Los Angeles, only to find out that it was like a small company that was doing theater at like in the 99 seat like world. And I went and I saw this production of The Last 5 Years. And afterwards, I went up to the producer and I was like, I just moved here. And if there's ever an opportunity for me to even audition for one of your shows, I would be so grateful.
I love
and it. Then she was like, okay. And like the next day, they called me and they were like, do you want to be in Ragtime? And I was like, yes, why not? And, you know, it was just like a musical. It was a huge thing. There was like no, just there weren't that many people auditioning. Mm-hmm. It was a good company, a fine company, but it was like a, you know, no pay, like just for fun, all that stuff. It was at the Hudson Theater.
Yep. Hudson Theater. Yep.
Yeah. But I did that show and I had the most amazing time. I made $0, but I met people that I'm still friends with today. Mm-hmm. And that kind of building that small little community by doing theater immediately kind of like made me feel like I wasn't alone, like in this big city.
Yeah.
And then the second show I did with that company, someone in it knew that I was like, needed an agent, knew that I was like hungry and there and doing the work and all that stuff. And was just kindly like, hey, you want me to introduce you to my commercial agent? And I was like, yes, please. And then that kind of got the ball rolling. And sure, that's lucky. We all have those little lucky things, but I put myself in that position of like, you know, like I put myself in the position. I wasn't just like, I want this. I was like performing, I was doing it.
Yeah.
And that was what got me how I was able to get my first agent.
I love that. Yeah. And Clayton, I like to give the advice for people. There's kind of a hierarchy to getting an agent. And I think the top of the hierarchy is if they see you in something and they fall in love with you in a sense, you know what I mean? And so you're doing it. And then the second thing is if you can get a referral from someone that can hire them, you know, like, or hire their clients, right? So from a producer, cast, you know, director. And then the third is from an actor, which is great when that happens. And then the fourth is like a blind submission. But I think a lot of times people go like just to the blind submissions and it's like you're way at the bottom, you know, and sometimes they don't have the options, but I think it's so much smarter to try to be active with what you're doing where they can find you or going through kind of your contact list and see, you know, so that's wonderful that happened. Yeah.
And it was a very small agency, but it was, I had good pictures, you know, and I was able to book a few like non-union jobs, but then I just got very specific and I was like, I'm going to climb this ladder in the commercial world.
Yes. And I think really if an agent, especially in the commercial world, even if they're small, if they like love you and see that you can book and call, it doesn't kind of really matter that much. You know what I mean? It's different than TV and film. Like if they're small, but they love you and you got a good look and you're doing stuff, right? It's just like, you get in there.
And it is about the headshot. Like that first thing is your headshot. Like people, like it's 100% about just having like that quirky smile headshot.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. There's a famous headshot. I think it used to be up in Ross Lacey's office for commercials that I love, Clayton, that I've talked to people about, which is this guy had like two fists under his, on his chin. And then there was a third fist like underneath the bottom of his chin. And like, it was up on the wall for a while. And I was like, that is so creative. And, you know, just kind of, it was, you know, it's hard to be kitschy like that, but I thought it totally worked, you know, so like you're saying, you know, it's just different. Yeah.
Have you found, like in your journey, like with improv and everything, has that kind of helped push any like more theater and stuff? Because like, it feels like you kind of just jumped right in, and it's like, it's impressive. A lot of people are, I think, very afraid of that in the beginning, of just kind of eyes looking at you and having to do this thing that you've never done before.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, I do have that lucky side where I have just, I've just done it since I was a kid. I mean, I get nervous and all those things, but I had been performing. And whenever you start out kind of doing like musical theater, I think it sets you up in a different sort of like.
Sure. It's embarrassing like, right away.
Yeah. Well, and you're a little less like timid and those things. But when I first started auditioning, I mean, but so yes, like for commercials and stuff, it's just very important to have like Groundlings, IO, whatever, like UCB on your resume, because that's what kind of has like, that's what kind of like drove that ship for me, the commercial thing. And like for a while, I shouldn't even say this, but I think I had UCB on my resume, even though I never even studied there.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Yeah. But I had performed there.
Sure. Yeah. Sure.
But like,
well, Clayton, I had some credits early on in my resume that were like films I did with my buddies. You know what I mean? Like, just like, it was like, that's called Bruised Lemons. And that's a indie you've never heard of that we shot in my backyard. You know? Yeah. Yeah. I get it.
Yeah. But I mean, I never like, I just honestly, I did commercials only for like 5 years as I kind of figured out the other stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So then doing commercials, kind of having success in that, how did you end up kind of getting your toe into like TV and film stuff? Because I saw that you did like Scream Queens, American Horror Story, some things like that. Did you get an agent first? Were you doing like casting workshops? How did you kind of like figure out, navigate that water?
Oh, do you? So there used to be this company called Act Now.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember this?
I do. Because they'd sign you up for like 3 weeks and like I was signing up like crazy. Yeah, they'd get you.
This was back in the day when casting director workshops were like really, really like the thing that was happening and people were doing them. And I went to some and I just had so much more to learn about acting. They weren't beneficial to me because I was like not a good actor, to be honest.
Yeah.
I was too performative. I was too like, I came from like commercials and like, you know, musical theater. And I was just way too performative. I didn't know what acting was. But I remember Act Now, there was this woman, I won't even say her name, but I remember her voice. And she called me when I had first moved here and she was like, "Hey, Clayton," she had an accent. She was like, "We have these, you know, like I have these spots for you. She sold it to me like I had won the lottery or something.
Oh my God, Clayton, I got the same phone calls from a guy. This is crazy. You're flashing me back. Now that you're saying that, yeah, this was a guy. Oh my, I 100%, I got the same calls.
So literally
solicit you, like, Corbin. They would call you and be like, I got three spots, you know, if you want to.
They cold call you and they're like, someone said you're really great and we want to have you in here. And when you're new here, you're like, oh my God.
Of course.
Yeah. They want me here. Not really realizing that they just ask other actors for like referrals.
Yeah.
And then they just call you. So I went and I did a little bit of like the casting director workshops and I never got anything out of that, but I did, you know, you learn a little bit in those.
Mm-hmm.
But again, my theatrical, how did I get my first theatrical rep? Well, interesting story. I don't even remember how I got them, but I think I was just referred again. Mm-hmm. And it was this company called Avant Artist and they were brand new.
French.
They're still around actually.
Oh, wow.
They're a pretty decent agency. And I remember... Yeah. The interesting part of that story is I signed up with them and I was getting like maybe one or two theatrical auditions a month. And I was like, they suck, because I was used to the commercial world.
Mm-hmm.
At the time and the age range I was getting like, you know, three commercial auditions a week or something like that.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's what I should be getting theatrically, not really realizing later that it's just fewer, there's less.
Yeah.
So I left them and went to a different agent, which was a kind of a mistake in a way, because I didn't realize I didn't know what I was like, what I had.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because when I look back, like I was auditioning for pretty big things and I auditioned for Risa Brahman Garcia multiple times before she became like my acting teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And she was casting like really cool stuff at the time. So I don't even, it was just doing theater that like someone came to see me do a play And I did tons of theater when I first moved here.
Yeah. And no, that's so good. I mean, yeah, it's great. It's a smart people, I think, undersell theater in LA, you know what I mean? And so I've always had great success just as far as the people and the work and like what you're talking about, Clayton. It sounds like, yeah, I mean, you've made really wonderful, you know, friends and contacts through that just because you're keeping yourself busy.
If you don't stay busy like that, when you're early on and here, you're going to feel like you're not part of it. And you're like on the outside. So that's why I always did theater. And that's why I always made my own content, because it just made me feel like I was doing something, made me feel like I was part of it without being like outside looking in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to shift to that, Clayton, making your own content, man. Yeah. I was dying. You had this video of like actors like coming to acting class late and stuff. These are like, sorry, I was on set, and like all these really funny, like just like hilarious, you know, like I just very, I think I shared it with Corbin. I was like, this is awesome. Cause it felt very, very true. How did you start creating your own content? And, you know, you've got a good following and stuff. I think I saw on Instagram. I'm sure the kids are all on TikTok now, but, also on Instagram. So how did that kind of create, and how'd you start that and kind of it blow up?
Yeah. I mean, again, so like right before I moved to LA, I had done one of those like 24-hour film festival, like 24-hour, like, you know, they give you like the name of like, they give you like a line and a location and three things, and everyone goes off and makes.
I just acted one of those. It was crazy.
Yeah. It's like a 24-hour or 48-hour film festival. This was 24, and it was in Dallas. And I did it with friends. And I was like, oh, that was like so fun. And like our film won like the festival. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, oh, that feels good to me. Mm-hmm. And this was, again, this will like date me, but driving out to LA when I moved out here, I remember being in Arizona and there was like a newspaper and it said something like YouTube becoming like a viable place for like, you know, like to post videos for actor, whatever.
Sure.
And so that was just like the sign of the times when I moved out here. But I made some silly little like short films and things that I just shot on a camcorder that I would post like on YouTube and on Facebook. And a lot of them were like, one of them was called what was inspired by like being released from a veil for the first time and like the pain of being released from a veil.
Corbin, you know what that is exactly when they say like, we want to check your dates. Yeah. They put you on and then they say, you know, so you block off the dates as an actor. Like, you're like, come on, baby.
It's basically
you're not booked, but they're like, we just want to make sure you're available. And they're always like, is your passport, you know, current? Yeah. And you're like, yes. Where am I flying to? And then they're like, nowhere. You didn't get it. You're like, God.
And you're like, you just get excited and you're like start spending money you don't have and all these things. And so I just did that. And then I would just make stuff because that's what I it's just part of me. Like I like always have to be making. I also did stand up a little bit in here in this like early days, but Vine came along and I started making Vines with my friend Alana Forsyth, and we blew up on Vine and we had like a million followers. Like way back in the day. And Vine is what started social media as we know it, like the whole thing and all that. Like people blew up on Vine and then these brand deals started coming in and all that stuff. And interesting story, all the big Viners kind of unionized when Twitter bought Vine and were like, hey, you need to pay us or we're leaving Vine. And Twitter was like,
is that like King Batch and stuff like that?
All these like they were biggest Brittany Ferland, they were like the big Viners
of
the day. And Twitter said no. So they all literally just left the platform. And because Instagram had just introduced video on their platform.
Right.
So they all left and Alana and I and some other creators stayed because Vine was like kind of courting us in a way, like stay. Mm-hmm. They took us to Spain. They were being very nice. They would send us like gifts. And then one day we just woke up and so we were loyal and we didn't push our following to other platforms.
Oh.
And then one day we woke up, we found out the same way everyone else did that Vine was just like, done.
That's crazy.
Done.
Like, and we were devastated because it was like, you know, I don't know why we just were, it was something we loved doing. Mm-hmm. And we even missed the email of how they were like, you have 1 month to download all your content. We like, didn't do it. And it's so like all of the content we made was like disappeared.
Oh no.
But yes. Yeah. So it just, that's how I got started in it. And mm-hmm. kind of the muscle of just making stuff over and over again. And Vine was 6 seconds. Mm-hmm. So it was like very much, how do I find the joke in 6 seconds? And it was, you know, it, like I learned to write and make stuff for Vine and for the internet and for the platform. So I, that's where I kind of like cut my teeth as like a writer in that very, very short time. But that kind of like developed to, eventually I moved on to Instagram and started posting stuff there. But it wasn't until, you know, kind of like pandemic that my stuff really blew up more. And mm-hmm. I got to a place where, you know, that content creation is my main job at this moment.
Yeah.
Partly because of the writer's strike and, or the strike, and partly just because it's become a thing. And like, for a long time I was like, I'm an actor. This isn't what I do. Like I was very resistant to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I was like, no, it's like, there's opportunity here. And it does affect my acting stuff. Like it's gotten to a point where it's helping me in the acting world. So, mm-hmm. I have no regrets.
Yeah. Oh, I have lots of regrets. Are you saying in general or just with the content creation?
Please? Well, sometimes I'll like, if I audition for like a dramatic thing, because I do like, to be honest, most of my film and TV stuff is dramatic. It's like my videos that I post on Instagram and TikTok are very silly.
Yeah.
Great character, a lot of wigs.
Yeah.
Most of the stuff I've done on television and movies is like dramatic. So
yeah,
a lot of times I'm just like, I hope I'll audition for something. And I'm like, God, I hope they have not seen my Instagram.
Don't go. Yeah. But you know, what's lovely, Clayton, is I think I love this idea. I remember now, you know, like you're talking about when you first got out here and I met with this like manager who would see me in a showcase and I wanted to be the kind of a writer actor. She's like, you have to pick one. You have to pick one. You can't be, you know, and I remember it being very, you know, and I wasn't that into writing. So it was definitely acting, but I feel like now it's such a cool, like I love, you know, I've been a casting professional and an acting teacher and an actor. And I love that it's way more accepted, I think, to do what you're saying, to kind of do these things. And they do feed off each other and they dovetail. And so I think it's that old kind of way of like, you know, I think it's changed, which is awesome.
I agree. You know what I mean? I think it's like people these days are, you know, like triple threats in like a different way. It's like you're an actor, you write your own content and you may produce your own stuff. That's just like, it's the only way I know of like the industry has never, even though I've worked, it's never been like, come on in. We need you here. So like the way that I've done it is by making my own stuff and kind of like showcasing myself in a way that people, making people pay attention to me because it's, you know, it's pretty saturated.
Yes.
And there's a lot of good actors and it's, you know, you like, I don't know.
Also, Clayton, I always tell people, use what you've got to get your competitive edge or advantage. You know what I mean? So like, if you're smart, use your smarts. You know, if you're good with money, you know, budget well. If you're good at creating content, like you learn from Vine that got that muscle going, then do that. You know what I mean? Like if you love doing stuff with other actors, then lead in that group. Like, you know, you gotta be, I love that you're always doing stuff. I mean, that Corbin, I mean, we're seeing that, right? I mean, just like doing the stand up and like creating stuff in theater. And I think it's like, you gotta, because it is so competitive, it is so challenging. Mm-hmm. Like you've gotta be doing things that you wanna do and figuring out, you know, how do I get myself out there? How do I get more opportunities? Cause it's hard.
Yeah. Well, and like if you've never been on set, then you need to just make a film, make a film with your friends so you can like kind of understand what it is that, that people are doing and you get to understand what your role is as an actor. It might not be what you think it actually is before, you know?
I think even like, right, like the skits you're doing, like you have to also respect the writing that you put in. Like it really puts it into perspective, all the work and all the people and all the moving parts, and you kind of have to know it. And that was just 6 seconds for Vine, you know, let alone like minutes and minutes. So it's just like really impressive that you can kind of be a multi-hyphenate and be able to still land exactly where you want to land, right? When it comes to these characters and stuff, are you still building them as you film it, or do you kind of go in knowing full well what you're going to try to hit?
I mean, again, it's kind of like, it's like the stand-up comedy muscle where like once you start doing stand-up, you're just, your mind goes to like a place of like, oh, this, how is this a joke? Like, how, like you're just looking for material. And I think that what I do on the internet is very much the same as what a stand-up does. So I'm just always looking for material in this world. And a lot of my content is about LA and like the wellness culture and like all that. So I just see things and I start little lists on my phone.
Is it all Erewhon based, Clayton?
A lot of it is Erewhon.
I didn't even know that. I just took a shot in the dark. It's gotta
go, that's the thing that I think we all have as actors is like, we're like sponges. Like, I mean, I can't like, I know other actors that do this too. Like if you hear someone next to you talking and they're like, I was at like, I don't know, like ordering food the other day and I hear someone say like, can I get a taco? And like, I could not help but be like, say it. I was like, can I get a taco? Like I just said, I was like, I have to know what they just said and say it. And like somewhere along in the next year, I'm going to like say, can I get a taco and like a, and something. Like that's a weird example, but it's like,
no, I like that. I want to see that note in your phone that says that. So we know you wrote it down.
I have an aunt in Wisconsin. I won't say which one. And she says, coupon. We're like, a coupon? She's like, coupon. Every time she says it, it's so fun. You can't like not, you can't unhear it after you've heard it, Clayton. So I love
that. I mean, awesome. But that's what we do, right? We're just like, observing. Like, I sound so cliche all the time, but that's literally
what
we do. Like, it's kind of like, I mean, I talk about it in therapy. I'm like, is it weird that I like tell these stories? Like I'll meet someone. And I like tell a story, a full story in my head about them as soon as I meet them. And my therapist is like, no, that's like kind of what you do. Yeah. That's what you do as an actor and a writer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the therapist is like, no, that's fine. Then writes down red flag. totally normal. I'm full next month.
This guy needs drugs.
Up the medication. Clay, that's awesome. All right, I want to get to Corbin and my favorite, one of our favorite parts of the show, which is your best bad acting. And Clayton, since you do comedy, we pulled a fun quote from a comedy. You can do it. Here's what's fun about it. You can do it in your own way. Okay. The idea with this is just kind of bad acting. So you can go over the top. You can do an accent. You can do a voice. You can, you know, improv a little around it if you want. We may give you a redirect, but the point is just to have fun and just to kind of play. That's all it is, and not try to be good. This is from Zoolander, by the way. So this is a classic. So whenever you're ready.
So no parameters?
No parameters. That's what's fun about it.
Where's my location? Okay. You know, it's hard work being this good, but I make it look easy.
That was nice.
I kill somebody.
Obviously, I want to give a redirect of, can I get a taco? That version. Obviously need to hear that voice.
Yeah. Who's that person?
You know, it's hard being this good, but I make it look easy. Anyways, can I get a taco?
Love it.
I love the idea. I always love the idea of like doing like a monologue and then ending it with like, and let me get a number 5. Doing this intense speech at like a...
Oh my God. I love it. Yeah. You know, I just don't know if Jennifer and I are going to work out. It's just like things have been going, you know, different places. And I really care about her. And I know she loves me, but like, wait, can I supersize those fries?
Yeah.
You know what's funny about that? I also think the idea is funny of like when you have a captive audience. I was just with my in-laws who are lovely, but they like sometimes with like the people that are working at the hotel, I could see them like get them in a corner and the employee's just like, uh-huh. And they're like, you're going to hear this story. And there was like a bunch of people where we just were, there was like, I think when you get older too, you're just like, I have an audience, and you're just going to tell your whole story, you know, and you're not reading the room at all. The person's like, oh, man. That's funny, Clayton.
But that's, you got it. I love when old people tell me stories.
Yeah. Oh, you do?
Yes, I actually do. I mean,
you settle in, huh?
I settle in and I'm like, let me hear how crazy. Like, it's they have more, they're more old people are more interesting to me.
Yeah.
Actually, today I was walking with this woman at the picket line who was like 68. She was like, she's been an actor forever. She was like, this beautiful woman. She was dressed as Elvira. And she was telling me about stories about how she lived in like Malibu in the 80s and used to hang out with Rob Lowe. And I'm like, I mean, I kept asking her questions to get to like the good stuff.
Yes.
And she was just like telling me all these like incredible stories about how like she was in a movie with Bob Newhart and he like, just like these amazing things that you have to dig for, but like way more interesting than like any person, young person talking.
Yeah. Oh my, no, that's a good point. If you can get to the good ones, I do appreciate that. Yeah. I when I first moved out to LA, there's a movie, it's called Neighborhood Watch. I think there's been a newer one, but this was an old horror movie. I mean, back in the day. And there was an actress who's a good friend of mine now, Anina Lincoln is her name. And she's like an old school New York actress. And she would not drive to set. So I would pick her up. I was running film. This is when they used to shoot on film. So I would run film up to Victorville. And if anyone knows where Victorville is from LA, it's a long drive. I actually loved it because I had a red convertible at the time. I just loved
hair blown in the
wind. I'd drive it for forever. I just drive forever. But the point is, I would drive this woman, Anina, who's still a friend of mine, and she was like, I don't even want to guess at her age, Clayton. And she would just like tell stories, and she'd bring her little dog, and I just loved like just hearing old school, like kind of old school Hollywood, and like, you know what I mean?
Anytime I can get someone going about that, I'm like, please do. So it's just fascinating because I love. I just love hearing about like the biz and like how it changes. And like, it's just, it's fascinating.
It's great. Clayton, Clayton, this has been awesome, man. This has been lovely. Just hearing your story. Yeah, and I think you. Also, you know, kind of, filling people in on, you know, creating their own path. I think that's Corbin, that's our title. Yep. No, but really you know, and I've put Clayton on tape for commercials, and you know, excellent actor, obviously, but also doing your own thing, which is great. I think it's always like we can do those. I always tell people, do those both paths, you know, be by your phone, have your phone ready for your agents, but then create your own stuff, because there's going to be downtime. You know what I mean? There's going to be uptime and downtime, and doing both those paths keeps you active.
Yeah. And I think it's like, I mean, not everyone should be writing their own content, but you have to kind of figure that out. Like, you know, it's worth it to try. It's worth it to make a short film. And I mean, it helps. Like I go on to auditions now and people know me, they know me from my Instagram. It's upped my profile. And if I can walk into the room and deliver something, it's like, it's a helpful combination.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And if you're right, maybe if it's not writing's not their thing, then maybe they're, you know, producing a play or something, then it's already pre-written. You know what I mean? So like finding those things that you're good at that, you know, I think that's part of the journey.
But it's finding just like things. Ultimately we're makers. We make things. Like that's how I look at this business. Like we make it as actors. We're part of this process of making a movie. It's not like it's all. And so just being in that repetition of making things is kind of that's what you're going to be doing anyways as an actor. Mm-hmm. So it's just do it yourself. And, you know, it's nice to sometimes be like, oh, I don't know if I can audition for that because I have this thing that I'm shooting, or like, you know, like, it's good to have that. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. No, busy people stay busy. I think you're totally right. So I think that's good. I think that is good. Yeah. Then they have momentum. You got momentum with you.
Yeah. And then you look at you have an audition come along and you're not like, oh, I need to.
Yes.
Like, you don't have the time to spend 5 hours on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just do a quick pass on it and you book it.
Yeah. Cause you're not stressed and worried and in your head too much. Yeah.
It took me like an embarrassingly long time to realize like the root word of creative is create. You know, like I always thought it was like its own thing. Like you're an artist, like its own category. It's like, no, you have to create, you have to be part of that. And it's a lot of people forget that in the weeds. They think, oh, I'll just wait here and suddenly I'll be Brad Pitt. And that's nice, you know?
Yeah.
Well, my thought on that is always, because I teach classes sometimes too. And I'm always like, I know that we all have this experience of thinking that like someone's going to come along. Mm-hmm. You're going to be walking down the street one day and someone's going to be like, that guy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You need that guy. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that does, like, when I first moved here, I literally thought like that. Maybe it was just me. And then I realized, oh, that doesn't happen. Like, that does happen, but it happens when you're like 15 and yeah. some, and like, they are like, oh, we can mold this person into like a star. Like, I moved out here when I was like 58. So it's like, to in order, which is not bad. You just have to work a little harder to like wedge yourself into the business.
Yeah, that makes sense. You look great, by the way.
Awesome. Clayton, this has been amazing, man. So appreciate you. Appreciate all your advice, all your stories of just like, you know, what you've been through and what you're doing. And, you know, where can people follow you if they want to know more about you and see what you're up to?
Yeah, just give me a follow over at Instagram. It's just at Clayton Farris, and it's F-A-R-R-I-S. Yep. And you can find me on TikTok too. And that's where I'm just posting funny stuff for
that's
you.
Really good.
Great. Yeah. Great. Awesome. Well, Clayton, this has been amazing. It's been wonderful having you. Appreciate your time and enjoy the rest of your day. All right.
You too. Thanks, Clayton. Bye. All right.
Bye, Clayton. Thank you for listening to the
Moon and Fox Eye Podcast.